Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Samach Aleph. We will begin Daf Kuf Samach on the base, 17 lines from the bottom, Heichen Eidim Chaisman. As we learned in our previous shiur, the Mishnah, the Gemara, have introduced that there are two types of documents. There's a Get Poshet, which is the standard document that we're familiar with all of the details of the transaction on the front of the page and the Eidim signed on the bottom. And then we have the Get Mekusher, the special type of document that is folded and the folds are sewn together. And as we learned at the end of the previous shiur, the reason that Chazal established this type of a shtar is because we had the Kohanim who was somewhat short-tempered and act sometimes a little too fast, right, to get too quickly, and therefore Chazal said we have a shtar written that'll take a time, it'll be delayed to get that, to get them to maybe calm down and think if this is what they want to do. So now our Gemara begins with the question of Heichen Eidim Chaisman and the perspective of how to understand this Gemara's question, explained in Mefarshim, is very much a continuation of what we learned at the end of the previous year. Meaning, we learned at the end of the previous year, as I just said, that our goal is to delay the writing and the effectiveness of the shtar. So now the Gemara wants to know what is the best way to delay, how is the most effective means of delaying the signature of the Eidim. And actually, the Mefarshim explained this Gemara beautifully. The Mishnah already said, Heichen Eidim, where the Eidim sign. We learned the Mishnah yesterday. The Mishnah says that the Eidim sign in the back of the shtar. What's the Gemara's question? Or if the Gemara is going to ask a question, shouldn't the Mishnah, the Gemara, as it typically does, quote the words of the Mishnah, that the Eidim sign Machayrev, and now the Gemara will begin to explain, what does Machayrev mean? What does the back mean? The Gemara doesn't do any of that. The Gemara just begins a continuation. Heichen Eidim Chaisman. What's going on here? So Mefarshim explained beautifully. Our Gemara is not specifically coming to explain the Mishnah. Of course, after we learn our Gemara, we'll be able to understand our Mishnah. The purpose of our Gemara is absolutely to continue yesterday's Gemara. That at the end of the shiur yesterday, we established that the purpose of the Shtar Mekusher is to slow things down. Now the Gemara asks, in the signing of the Eidim, that we want to do it in a way that will be most delayed, how is that accomplished? And we have a machlokes, Rav Hunama ben Kesh l'Kesher, the Eidim sign between the folds. Rav Yehuda ben Abba Omer, Achura Ksav, the sign on the back of the document, Kenegad Ksav b'chutz. We'll explain his opinion much more in depth later in the shiur. But just the posh, the pshat, is that they saw it on the back of the shtar, specifically by shtar mekusher, and it has to be corresponding to where there is wording on the front of the shtar. Interesting shaila in the paiskim. Question could easily come up. A document is written, and as we said in the previous year, most of our documents that we write are not shtar mekusher, the shtar poshet. We don't even know what a shtar mekusher really means, we said. And you write, and there's a lot of words. But you finish your document at the bottom of the page, where are the Eidim supposed to sign? Where are the Eidim supposed to sign? So, the best thing, the Paiskim suggest, is don't do it that way. Don't have that the first page will just be the signatures, the words, and the second page will just be the signatures. Because the signatures, you have two separate pieces of paper. And what the best way to do is, to have some of the text of the shtar continue on to the second page, and the Eidim signing under that text. What about signing on the back of the page? Their world paper was expensive. What about signing the back of the page? So certainly chatchila, a document that should be considered halachically valid, should not be written on the back of the page. But if you don't have paper, or you don't have the, or whatever reason, you want to write on the back of the page, there, it's not just l'chatchila. There, if you're just going to have the edim on the back of the page, without any of the text on the back of the page, those signatures will be nothing. You have to have, if you're going to write the edim on the back of the page, you have the edim signed on the back of the page, you have to have part of the text on the back of the page, otherwise the shtar won't be a valid shtar. But the shtar, because it's only shtar kosher that is written on the back of the page. Amle Rabbi Bachamle Rav Chizda Rav Huna. The Gemara at this point assumes that when it says that you sign between the folds, Rav Huna Dalam Ben Kesh L'Kesher, when he says you sign between the folds, Kusaka Daitach Ben Kesh L'Kesher Megavoy. That what does it mean you sign inside the folds? Not in the back of the paper, in the front of the paper. But the signatures are put in the place that will ultimately be folded and sewn together. Ask Tosfos, how could the Gemara have such a havamina? I just quoted before, our Mishnah we learned yesterday says explicitly that the Edom sign in the back of the shtar. So how could the Gemara even have a havamina that you're signing in, on the front of the shtar just where it's going to be folded? So the Rishonim answer that the Gemara in the havamina assumes that when the Mishnah said that the Edom sign in the back of the shtar, what the Mishnah meant is that the Edom's signature are not visible. That the Edom's signature is concealed. But not that the shtar, that it has to be specifically in the back. On that asked the Gemara, for whom a kusha da kasa l'kamei the Rebbe, there was a shtar kusha that came to Rebbe. Vam Rebbe ain't z'man b'zeh. There's no date here. Amalei Rav Shimba Rebbe, the Rebbe. So he said to him, before you invalidate the shtar, because obviously a shtar without a date is invalid, Shema ben Ksharav Muvla. Maybe the date is between the folds. Palya, he opened it up, the Chazir. And actually he saw the date indeed in one of those folds. Ask the Gemara, Viv Isa, if our understanding is correct, that when it says there's no, that when Rav Huna spoke about where this Edom sign, he meant that the Edom sign in the folds, why was he only concerned about the date? He should also have said, I don't see any Edom. Because the Edom are in the same place as the date. So if he doesn't see the date, he obviously doesn't see the Edom. Yet we only see that he's concerned about the date. V'misa, ask the Gemara if Rav Huna is correct, that the Edom signatures are in the folds, so why was he only worried about the date? V'misa, what he should have asked about is Ein Zman B'zeh, then Edom b'zeh miboylei. He should have asked, and where are the Edom? The Edom are in the same place as the date. And then he said, they opened it up and he saw them in the folds. The date and the Edom. So it's obvious that the Edom and the date are not in the same place. So how can we understand Rav Huna's, opinion to be, asked the Gemara, that it means in the folds in the front of the shtar? Ask Tosfos. And I have to say that this is one of those situations where the question I think is a lot better than any answer that I've seen. As Tosfos, the Gemara is concerned that the Shtar Mekusha was brought to him, and he didn't see a date. He didn't realize that the date is in the folds. But not only the date is in the folds, as we spoke about in the previous year, the Gemara even brought a pasuk, the entire Torah is in the folds. So why was he only worried about the date missing? He shouldn't be worried about the whole Torah. The entire text of this transaction he didn't see. Why is he only worried about the date? Very difficult question. Some Rishonim suggest that the Torah, the main aspect of the Torah is the date. Everything else is really not part of the Torah. Which is very bechiddush. Because just like the date is crucial, the names, and what you're buying, what you're selling, what you're borrowing, what you're lending, that's all crucial. So how could that be less crucial and less required than the date? Another pshat that I saw, again, these are pshatim that I saw in the Rishonim, is that even though we said yesterday, typically the way the Shtar Mekush is written is that the folds with the Torah are on top and the rest of the Shtar is on the bottom, here it was just the opposite. It was the Poshet, the Typhus was on top,
and the tariff was on bottom. So what happened here was he was looking at the shtar with the tariff, with the typhus, with the boilerplate on top. But usually where is the date? The date on any document is right on top. Here, given that the date is part of the tariff, it wasn't on top. So as soon as he looked the shtar, before he opened the folds, as soon as he started reading from the top, he said there's something missing here. The date, which belongs right on top. So he said, no, the date is part of the tariff. And in the shtar mekusher, that's on the bottom, together with all the other details. Again, those are the answers to the question. But again, our Gemara's question is, if we're saying that in the shtar mekusher, according to Rav Huna, just like the date is in the folds in the front of the shtar, so are the signatures of the Edom, so he should have asked about the Edom. Obviously, the Edom and the date are not in the same place. Rather, says the Gemara, Amalei, when Rav Huna speaks about the Edom being signed between the folds, Misavit, don't explain it to mean ben keshem lo keshem megavoy, between the folds and the front of the star, loy. Rather, what he meant was ben kesher lo keshem avroy, between the folds, but they're signed on the back of the star. Ask the Gemara, Tenechish, but why not be concerned? If we're going to have a situation that the Edom are signed on the back, so the Gemara asks a Poshta Kasha. If the Edom are signed on the back, the bottom of the shtar could have extra paper on the bottom. So normally, you don't have to worry about somebody inserting extra clauses between, and we're going to discuss this more in tomorrow's Shir Metz Hashem, about inserting extra clauses between the text of the shtar and the signatures. Because where are the signatures? Right below the text of the shtar. But here, the signatures aren't right below the text of the shtar. Rather, the signatures are on the back of the paper. So you have all this paper below this, still open, where you can write whatever you want. Why are we not worried that extra clauses will be added here? V'neichesh, ask the Gemara, Dilmazayif, the cost of Madaboy, he can add extra clauses on the bottom of the paper in the front, V'chsim Misadi, and I'll have Edom sign on the back. Asked the Rishonim, didn't we say in our previous year that the word get is the Gematria 12 to teach us that a get is 12 lines? So we'll see that more than 12 lines, we'll automatically know it's disqualified. So Rishonim say three truths into this question. One answer is that halacha of 12 lines is only by a get. Here we're not only speaking about get, we're talking about all types of documents. This meaning that a get is only 12 lines is by a divorce, not by other documents. Another teretz is even by a get, the minig is that a get is 12 lines. That doesn't mean if a get is brought to you with more than 12 lines, it's automatically possible. A third teretz along the same lines is when the minig is that a get is 12 lines long, that's the standard language of the get. But let's say this get has some extra clauses. That could be more than 12 lines. So the fact that there's more than 12 lines will not be indicative of anything. So the Gemara's question is very gishmak. If the Edom is signing on the back, why are we not worried in the front? There'll be extra words. Answers the Gemara. The Ksibe Sharvakayim. The halacha is that after you finish writing the text of a document, you write the word Sharvakayim. This is it. And therefore, if somebody will write extra after those words, It'll be obvious that was only added later. V'neichesh, ask the Gemara, that doesn't solve my problem. V'neichesh, till makosav madaboy, he'll write what he wants, for had the kosav sharvakayim, and then he'll write sharvakayim again. We should have said he has to write the word sharvakayim twice. But why are we not concerned that he'll write sharvakayim a second time? It'll mean that they added, then realized that they need to add words. Because the kasha shar of kaim machrina, answers the Gemara, chat shar of kaim kasvinan, a get, a shtar is only kosher when it has one shar of kaim, tre shar of kaim like kasvinan. If you have two shar of kaims, the second shar of kaim is meaningless. Machloikas rishayim, what happens if you'll have such a document? We have a text, you have shar of kaim, And then you have another clause, and Shar V'Kayim afterwards. So certainly anything that appears after the first Shar V'Kayim, we don't have to take into consideration. That's Poshet. The question is, will that disqualify the entire Shtar, that some Rishayim suggest? Other Rishayim say that the Shtar is not necessarily disqualified. Only the extra clause is not going to be counted, considered. But that has nothing to do with everything before the first Shar V'Kayim. Furthermore, from here, and Taisus and Ramban both discuss this, Barichus, from here it seems that the need to write Shor V'Kayim in a document is only by Shtar Mekusher. Because by Shtar Mekusher you have all this extra paper on the bottom of the paper, and we need to be concerned that you're going to add in extra words, so there you have to write Shor V'Kayim, and anything after the Shor V'Kayim is discounted. But it seems that in a regular Shtar, there's no need to write Shor V'Kayim, because you don't have this concern, because the Eidim could sign right under the text. And Tosfos says, indeed, that is correct. However, once the minig was established that Shor V'Kayim is written by Shtar Mekusher, the minig became that by all Shtaris, even by Shtar Poshet, where the reason for Shor V'Kayim to be there isn't really there, you have to write Shor V'Kayim. It's interesting, you look in the Ramban. The Ramban is very interesting, sort of takes the following approach. First, the Ramban disagrees with Tosfos. And he says he doesn't understand what one has to do with the other. But then he agrees that the minig is to write Shor V'Kayim, even by Shtar Poshet. And now we have a Machlokes Rishayim. The minig, as we just explained, is clearly that even by Shtar Poshet, Shor V'Kayim should be written. What will be if the Shor V'Kayim is missing? So it's clear that by Shtar Mekusher, if you don't have Shor V'Kayim, the Shtar is completely invalid. What will be the halacha on a Shtar Poshet? That as we just explained, the entire reason you have Shor V'Kayim by Shtar Poshet is only because that's what we do by Shtar Mekusher. What will be the evidence if it's missing? Will it invalidate the Shtar or not? It's actually Machlokes Rishayim. Ask the Gemara, the Leichish, why don't we have a different concern? He'll erase the word Shor V'Kayim, where they appear in the Shtar. The Kosev by the boy, he'll add an extra text to his benefit. For her, the Kosev Shor V'Kayim. And then he'll write Shor V'Kayim. Answers the Gemara. We don't have to worry about that. Because if something is erased in a Shtar, it's noticeable. Omer Rabbi Yochanan taught us, Teluyo. If a word is inserted in a Shtar, that's clear that it wasn't there when you wrote the Shtar. And we'll discuss this also in tomorrow's shir. The halacha is that if at the bottom of the shtar, where you have the kiyum of the shtar, the hempik of the shtar, the certification of the shtar, it's listed that this was there, this was omitted, and then put in later, and Bezdin certifies it, the halacha is teluya, if it was put in later, mekuyemus, and you were mekayim the shtar, with the kiyum indicating that this is what happened in the writing of the shtar. And this happens. Let's say you have a ksuba, and the Rav reads the ksuba, and he sees the word missing. So you don't have to write a new ksuba. You could put it in, just write in the word there, between the lines, and at the bottom make a hempik saying, this was done that way. I've seen it done by weddings. So, that's fine. Again, here too we have a machlokes rishayim. What happens if you find a shtar that has a word that was obviously inserted later, and you don't have kim on the bottom of the shtar? Will that invalidate the entire shtar? What opinion? Another opinion is, it doesn't invalidate the shtar. Just that word is not counted. Because you don't have the kiyum on that word. But mochuk, but if a word is erased, there it's possible. Vapish mekuyim. Kiyum can't help you for the erasure. What erasure can kiyum not take care of? Le'yamim mochuk pasuk, le'yamim shor v'kayim. If the place where the word shor v'kayim should have been written, that means you see that there's an erasure on the shtar. And the erasure is in a place explained to Rishonim where it can make sense that the word Shor V'Kayim were written. And the erasure is the amount of space that it takes to write the word Shor V'Kayim. Then you have to throw out that shtar. Ukashir Shor V'Kayim. So, there's no problem.
What are you worried about? That he erased Shor V'Kayim and put it, and then added in text, and then had Shor V'Kayim written later at the end of the shtar? Because you only can have Shor V'Kayim once. You don't have to worry about it. Why don't you have to worry about it? Because you'll notice that it was an erasure there, and if it'll be in a place that Shor V'Kayim could have been written, and it's the amount of space that Shor V'Kayim takes up, you automatically disqualify the shtar. However, says the Ritva, when are we concerned that there was an erasure of Shor V'Kayim and that it would disqualify the shtar? Only if the extra clause after that erasure is to the benefit of the Baal Shtar. Let's say I'm the loiva. And I have a clause there after this erasure that's to my benefit. So we have to be concerned that I played shtick here. I cut across that to Shor V'Kayim and put an extra clause to my benefit and then wrote Shor V'Kayim at the end. But let's say the extra clause where after the erasure is to my detriment. So we don't have to be worried that that there was anything done illegal. Because why would I want to erase a Shor V'Kayim that works against me? But then the Ritva asks a very interesting question. What would be the halacha? You have an erasure. Let's think about this case. You have an erasure in a spot where the word Shor V'Kayim might have appeared. And the clause that is there after that spot that we were having an erasure is to my benefit and to my detriment. It's very common. It's not perfect great and not perfectly bad. So how do we look at it? Do we look at it like it's to my detriment and we should count it? Do we look at it like my benefit and we just said that we discount it? So the Ritva says the halacha is as follows. If we could explain, it seems that this clause wasn't, the sentence wasn't written in one time, so we could say that the part that was to my detriment was written first, and the part to my benefit I added later, and we'll only look at the detriment part, not the benefit part. But let's say it's obvious that it was written in one time, so the person who, the malva, for example, in the shtar, can't say I'm only going to take half the clause and not the other half. If you're going to take the clause, which is clearly written at one time, you have to take all of the clause. Or if you don't want to take the clause, don't take it. But you can't pick and choose a half clause. This is the way the Gemara explains the first opinion that we learned, Rav Huru's opinion, that the shtar is signed lemaskana in the fold in the back. But we started the shir with the other opinion, the opinion of Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, damachur eksav, uknegit haksav in b'chutz. According to him, you write, you have the Adam sign on the back of the piece of paper, where the wording ended on the bottom. Ask the Gemara, v'leichesh, why won't we be concerned? Dilma kos megavoy, maybe he'll write extra clauses in the front of the shtar. Dilma kos megavoy madaboy, he'll add extra words in the front of the shtar. Umachtim sadi yaseir mavroy, and he'll add other edim in the back of the shtar. So we'll have that he could have played games with the shtar, added an extra clause to his benefit, and he'll have Edom sign in the back. So the first obvious question is why would Edom agree to sign? They're already Edom. We need three Edom. You already have the three Edom. Why would any other Edom agree to sign? They would say, what do you need us to sign? So that the Rishonim answer, we've learned this concept, Baruch Hashem, many times, that what is one of the purposes of Edom signing a shtar? Edom signing a shtar bring publicity to the shtar. Edom signing a shtar bring publicity to a shtar. So the publicity, I'll say, you know what, I have three Edom, but I want the more Edom to sign because I wanted to make this transaction even more public. But that wasn't really my intent. My intent was to have Edom sign corresponding to the front where I put in the extra clause. Ask the Rishonim. So why doesn't the Gemara give a simple suggestion? Cut off the extra paper on the bottom of the paper. You should never have a shtar mekusher with extra paper on the bottom. So Rishonim answer, or as we're going to learn in tomorrow's shir, one of the things that they used to do is they used to put ink there where nobody could add any words. So why doesn't I just give that advice? So in terms of adding the ink, the Farshim say, because we're concerned if you're going to add ink, people will say that the signatures on the back are just there to say that the ink is properly there, but not the wording of the shtar. To avoid that mistake, we want no ink there. But why don't we cut the bottom?
The answer is very simple, because sometimes we do want to put an extra clause that both parties are agreeable to. And that's why we also don't cut the paper that we may actually need. Or sometimes, explain the Rishonim, we're going to want to be Mekayim the Shtar. Where does the certification, even of a Shtar Mekusha, belong? In the front. But if I'm going to cut the paper on the bottom, I'm not going to have where to put the hempik. And therefore, the Gemara suggesting that we should cut the bottom is not an option. So we're back to where we started. What are we supposed to do here? Answers the Gemara. Omalei, mi savris, edem kesidra chsimi, edem amata lemal chsimi. Says the Gemara, the way that the edem are signed are not across, horizontally, but rather vertically, up. And therefore, if, let's say, the aide's name, that's the example we're going to use, is Reuven ben Yaakov. So we have Reuven ben Yaakov going up. Then we'll have Shimon ben Yaakov going up. So if you're going to cut off, or if you're going to add, they're not supposed to be added below it. All the Adam have to start from the bottom of the page. But before we go further, as we will learn, what is the best way to have a star signed by Adam? The best way is Reuven ben Yaakov Adam. However, the halacha, and all this is going to become clear in the Gemara Mitzvah Shem, the halacha is, if somebody signs his name Reuven ben Yaakov, and he omits the word aid, the shtar is still kosher. Another way of signing is Reuven, just signing Reuven alone. Another way of signing is ben Yaakov alone. But there, the halacha is, if you just sign your name Reuven alone, or you just sign your name ben Yaakov alone, you have to add the word aid. Now let's learn the Gemara. Maybe the worst line of this shtar is the last line. So what will this person go do? He'll cut off the last line of the shtar because he wants to get rid of that line. Yes, the word Reuven is going to be corresponding to that last line. He'll cut off the name Reuven. If he cuts off the name Reuven, he just cut out the name of the aid and he's left without any Edom. And the Shtar without any Edom obviously is meaningless. Not true. Miskasha ben Yaakov Eid. He still has the words ben Yaakov Eid there because the Tanan, as I quoted before, sawing a Shtar by just saying ben ish ploini Eid, kasher. So we still have a problem. Answers the Gemara, you're careful to write the Ksiv Reuven ben Bechadar. You don't write Reuven just the word Reuven corresponding to the last line. You have the word Reuven ben corresponding to the last line. So if you're going to cut out the word Reuven, you also have to cut out the word ben with it. The Ksiv Reuven ben Bechadara, the Yaakov aid, and the word Yaakov on top of it on another line. Ask the Gemara, that isn't an Eitzer, because the Gleichish, so fine. Dil Magaisle Reuven ben, he'll cut out the names Reuven ben, but it'll still have the words Yaakov Eid. And that, as we said earlier, is still acceptable. The Tanan, as we learned in the Mishnah, I quoted it a moment ago, signing a shtar just with the words Ish Pliny Eid, kosher. Answers the Gemara, the likes of Eid. Even though, as I said earlier, the right way to sign a shtar is Reuven ben Yaakov Eid, here, by the Get Mekusher, Chazal said, don't write the word Eid. If you don't write the word Eid, now we could go back to everything. Even if you'll be left with Ben Yaakov Eid, even if you'll be left with Ben Yaakov, or you'll be left with Yaakov alone, it won't be a problem. Because Ben Yaakov alone, or Yaakov alone, there you have to have the word Eid. And Chazal are telling us, don't put in the word Eid. So now nobody could cut. Because if you're going to cut off Reuven, you're going to be left without a valid signature. Ask the Gemara. Ask the Rishonim. The next teretz of the Gemara is the obvious teretz. What was the kasha? That the person signed his name Reuven ben Yaakov Eid. The person had an aid signing Reuven ben Yaakov Eid. But he wants to get rid of the last line. So he cuts off the last line, the words Reuven ben. And he's left with the words Yaakov. But who's the aid? Reuven, not Yaakov. So Reuven's signature doesn't look like his father's signature. So what's the Havamina? And in fact, that's the Gemara's Teretz. Everybody says, I'm a loy kos of aid. You don't have to have the problem with aid. Loy kos of aid, you wrote the word aid. The Yedidin, the Hachsimus Yadeh, this is, it's Reuven's signature, not Yaakov's signature. Lav the Yaakovu. And this Teretz is so obvious as Toysus and Ritva. But what was the Gemara's Havamina? That he'll cut off Reuven Ben, and he'll be left with Yaakov, and Yaakov didn't sign it, Reuven signed it. So nobody's going to confuse it. So Ritva has a very simple teretz. He says as follows. Typically, children and their fathers have similar handwritings. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Ritva says. He says they have similar handwritings. So since they have similar handwritings, so even though it was Reuven that signed, not Yaakov, the Gemara and the Havamina assumed that people may get confused. That's what the Gemara says. That no, even though it's a son and a father, the signatures aren't necessarily identical. That's how Ritva learns the Gemara. Taisa learns the Gemara differently. He says, absolutely, everybody's signature is unique. And my signature doesn't look like my father's signature. However, he says, there are many people in the world that are not detail-oriented. And you'll bring a shtar that says, you owe me money. And there's maybe a line that was added that was part of, that was essential to this transaction. But the person, the malva, doesn't necessarily remember all the details. So he won't challenge, and he sees that there are Adam signed, and he won't challenge that it was signed improperly. Because of that, Chazal were concerned in the Havamina, that just having the word Yaakov, even though it wasn't Yaakov that signed, it was Reuven that signed, but the malva won't pay that close attention. That's what I'm talking about. If Reuven signed, and not Yaakov, nobody's going to rely on that. Ask the Gemara, but there's a different problem. The Dilma, the Shmei Davu Chasim. Maybe my name is indeed Reuven. My father's name is Yaakov. Maybe I sign my father's name as my signature. So, ask Rabbi Chanan. Isn't this such a far-fetched question? My name is Reuven. My father's name is Yaakov. Would I sign my name as Yaakov? So Rabbi Chanan says a very important concept, a very important yesod in understanding the entire sugya. What are we attempting to do here? We're attempting to disqualify a shtar. Says Rabbi Chanan in the halacha, when we have a shtar in front of us, the attitude is supposed to be just the opposite. The attitude is supposed to be that if I have a shtar, avada the shtar is a kosher shtar. So even if it takes a far-fetched svara to be machshir the shtar, I'd rather rely on a far-fetched svara to be machshir the shtar rather than to say the shtar is possible. So tomorrow, there has to be a shear how far-fetched something is. The Shavik in a Shmei the day, people don't not use their own name, the Chosim the Shmei Davua. Actually, there's a Chuvus to Rechaim that says, based on this Gemara, that even though a person is not allowed to call his father by name, we see from here you can write your father's name. Because otherwise the Gemara says, how could you write your father's name? Just like you're not allowed to call your father by name, you're not allowed to write your father's name. So you see, writing and saying is not the same. Ask the Gemara. Right. But here it's even more. You're just writing Yaakov alone. Notice if you're writing a Sefer, the Paiskim say, if you're writing a Sefer and you want to quote something in the Sefer from your father, you don't have to write Adoni Avi. You can write my father by his name. Ask the Gemara, V'dim l'saman v'av mehu d'shavya. Maybe a person uses his father's name, because the Gemara now is teaching us, there's another way of signing. You don't necessarily have to sign with your name, or with a name. You could sign just with a symbol. And maybe the symbol that you're using is your father's name. The Rav Tzaya Kavra. Rav, when he used to sign, used to use a symbol of a fish. Rav Chanina Tzaya Charusa used to sign a palm tree. Rav Chizda Samach, Rav Oishia Ayin, Rav Chizda would be a Samach, Rav Oishia would be an Ayin. Rav Barfuna Makusa, his symbol would be the mast of a ship. So maybe you used your father's name, but not as a simon. And so the Gemara, and the Machlok Shoshoinim, if you're using a symbol as a signature, we said before, sometimes the word aid is essential, sometimes the word aid is not essential. We said if you sign Reuven Ben Yaakov, the word aid is not essential. If you sign Reuven alone or Ben Yaakov alone, it is essential. Here we have machlokes rishon. If you're signing with a symbol, is the word eid essential? So maybe you used your father's name as your simon. Answer the gemara lechotzav inish l'shivul shmei davur simona. A person, that's a chutzpah. To use your father's name as a simon is unacceptable. So back to where we started. Why are we not concerned that you signed Reuven ben Yaakov and you cut off the Reuven ben, and like that you got rid of the last name? Answers the gemara. Zutra Oma, Lamach Klahai. We don't have to worry about this. Kol Mekush Shein Eidim Kolam B'Shedech as possible. Which means as follows. According to Mazutra, it was just the opposite of what we said before. All of the Eidim were strictly signed on the last line of the Shtar. It's not one on top of the other, not one parallel to the other. That's the way we're going to learn the Gemara. But all along the, horizontally, the bottom line. Now let's think about it. What do you want to do? You want to cut off that last line? Could that last line have something detrimental to you? Cut it off. You know what you're going to be left with? No Eidim. And therefore, Chazal didn't have to worry about the last line that may have something detrimental to the Baal HaShtar being cut. The Mefarshim discuss this concept that we just learned in the Gemara, that people used to use symbols as a signature. It's interesting, actually. I saw that already from the times of the Rishonim, on certain matzevis, they saw that there's the symbol of a cat. And they asked how, in fact, people came and asked the Maram, how could you, we should perhaps take that off. It's so embarrassing to have the symbol of a cat on a matzeva. So he said, no. He said, every family used to have a name. And every family had a family symbol. So there's a very famous family name called Katzenelleboygen. And since their name was Katzenelleboygen, which starts with cat, so the family symbol was a cat. And when somebody from that family passed away, they used to put a cat on the matzeva. And if you look in old cemeteries, you will find in matzevas there are certain symbols that don't seem to make any sense. But they represent the symbol of the family. That family, every family had its own symbol. The Gemara here said, now, what was the simon of Rav? Fish. What was the simon of Rav Chanina? A palm. So some Rishonim say, why did he use a fish or why did he use a palm? So some Rishonim say, it's hard to explain. The Rav liked fish. And Rav Chanina liked palms. He liked dates. Very hard pshat. So the Mashal sort of modifies the pshat. He says that Rav liked fish. So he was makbid that Lekovit Shabbos, he should always have fish. And Rav Chanina liked dates, so he's careful that Lekovit Shabbos, he should always have a date. And therefore, that's what they used as their family symbol. But I saw a beautiful vart for Ramei Shapiro, why Rav used a fish and Rav Chanina used a date. Obviously, Rav and Rav Chanina were the great Talmid Chachamim, the great Mabitzei Torah of their generation. The Gemara says that a fox was walking once along the beach, and fish were all, he saw the fish swimming away from the shore. He asked them, why are you swimming? They said, because there's somebody there fishing, and he's going to catch us. So we swim away from the fishermen. So the fox told them, why do you have to swim away into the ocean? Come on to the earth, come on to the beach. So the fish answered, Ma b'makom chiyuseinu, if in the ocean where we can survive. We have to fight for our lives. The Mokum is saying, we can't survive outside of the water. So Rav's attitude to learning was like a fish. That it's like a fish in the sea. He can't survive outside the sea. Rav said, I can't survive. Klal Yisrael can't survive. Ramesh Shapiro said this when he started a yeshiva, not in Lublin, in Sanuk. I can't survive without Torah. Similarly, Rav Chanina made the same point. He said that the Talmidim and the Yeshiva are like the branches of the tree. And just like the branches grow out of the tree, and that's how they grow and start being able to give fruit, you have to take children with them when they're still young, young branches, and attach them to the trunk, attach them to the Torah, to Yitzchayim Hilam Achzikim Ba, and then when those children grow up, they will be able to give peiros, be able to be wonderfully, wonderful mamshichei of the Derech HaTorah V'Avayit V'Yirah.